Originally, we were intending this to be an It's a Show short, but I think it's going to be a full-length feature edition because I just scored an interview with a really cool author. His name is Greg Iles. Natchez Burning is the book he just wrote. He's been on the New York Times bestseller list with every novel he's ever done. They've turned several into movies. This one, they're definitely thinking of turning into a movie, and it's about racism, which is still a prevalent topic in a sad state of affairs in today's world. Look at the playoffs with P.K. Subban and what happened on Twitter with the Boston Bruins fans, and it's just a sick, ugly thing. I remember being a kid, and my first exposure to racism was reading the Jackie Robinson book, and Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball.
Right,
and it was all about the horrible things. They made a movie.
There's a movie, yes.
Yeah, just recently. Yeah. I forget what it was called. It was just really an eye-opener for a young farm kid. And to think it's still all these years later, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore, and it's still happening.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty sad to see that it is still happening, but it should be a good interview. I'm looking forward to it. So that's on the latter half of this episode 23.
All right.
So welcome. I've still got the SARS plague. And
we're awful close here in this on-location shoot. We're doing mouth-to-mouth podcasting here.
I went to the doctor this morning, and I've had this for about a week, so I went to the walk-in clinic because I feel like I'm not improving, but I'm not getting worse either.
Right.
So I went in just to, let's get rid
of this. What's up there? What's in there?
Because I've got a lung cough situation,
yeah,
a throat, and I'm just like, you know what? Give me something.
Yeah.
So I did a checkup. And I got some pills, but the good part is I got two bottles of cough syrup with codeine.
Sweet! So
I'm hooked up.
Yeah.
My first prescription in like 2.5 years, so.
Wow. So you've been trouble-free for 2.5 years.
Putting that work amazing drug plan into good use today, so.
So why do you think you've been trouble-free? Because of, echinacea, or what do you think?
Generally, I'm pretty healthy. I only get sick maybe once a year, if that. And usually it's a good hit. This is a good hit,
yeah.
So I should be good to go for the rest of the year, I think, knock on wood.
You know, I've had two sinus infections since Christmas. And I got the two-week course, then I got the 7 magic bullet pills.
Yeah.
And now, I swear to God, that's still what I have. It's still up there because I take 4 Advil every morning, 4 Advil every mid-afternoon, 4 Advil, and it just barely touches
every day,
it. Every day. And I don't think that's good for the liver, or somebody told me.
Not gonna be good for
I'm not a doctor. I just play one on the podcast. Hey, I got a GM recall.
Who hasn't had one in the last, couple months?
Yeah, they initially sent me the first letter, said you will be getting a letter. So then I get the next letter about 2 weeks later. And it said, the second letter said, whatever you do, do not have a keychain or any type of heaviness hooked up to your key. Because that little bit of weight swinging on your keychain could cause the ignition to shut off in mid-go.
And I've never actually shut off my ignition in mid-go. What happens?
I don't know, but I don't think it's good.
Especially 100 kilometers an hour.
If you're on a major highway. So now the thing is I have to alert GM immediately, and then I have to wait because they're a little backlogged on the parts.
Of course.
It keeps factory workers going, but GM's not going to make any money on it.
Well, this is their record-breaking recall, isn't it? I saw it on the news
the other day. There's 16 vehicles, and they all got something wrong with them.
Yeah, my day job has the same problem where we just got a recall. I'm like, that poor vehicle in the last 2 years I've been there has had 3 recalls. I'd go in, get it fixed or whatever. But
wow. We give them a government bailout, and what do they do with it?
Yeah.
Shit the bed.
Did you see the 50 cent pitch? He threw the opening pitch for some baseball team like a couple days ago.
I heard about it, but I didn't see it. It was bad.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
I could probably throw better. I'm not going to try, but I could probably. It went way off to the left.
We were just talking about this moments ago. Like, the Blue Jays, as we stand at this taping, 8 in a row. Unbelievable.
It's good because they're your team, are they not?
Yeah, well, always been my team, but got away from baseball for a long time because I got upset when they traded all my favorite lines when I was a kid, and I realized, this is commerce. This is not sports. And now I'm back because it's just fun to follow along. And they're usually hapless losers, but right now
they're storming up.
They're rolling.
So you're a Jays fan. You got baseball to watch. Are you watching any hockey at all?
Yeah, I'm trying because we don't have TV, but I got the CBC Hockey Night in Canada online HD feed. And it didn't work for me in the game last night. It froze up a bunch of times. The game previous, no problem.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful picture on my big, we hook in the cable.
I saw a photo. It was a good setup.
Yeah, so a good setup. But it malfunctioned at the junction, and I had to hear about the game after the fact.
So are you cheering for the Habs, Canada's team?
Because they're Canada's only, I have no choice. My allegiance is to this country, so I can't ignore the Habs. And there's some pretty remarkable stuff happening on ice with those guys.
I just want to bring this up. The reason why I bring up the Habs is because they have now moved. They've bumped the Corey Hart finale show. It was supposed to be this Saturday night in Montreal at the Bell Centre. Fans from all over the country, all over the world, upset because it's now been bumped to a couple days later. Plans are ruined.
Hearts are crushed. Hearts are broken.
Can't wear your sunglasses at night.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Poor Corey Hart. And I thought, because I have a friend who's going to the show, and she was concerned about the possibility of the show being bumped. And I was like, well, this show's been around. It's been booked for a substantial amount of time. There's no way. The logistics of it, it would be a nightmare. Can't they just bump, move the game, you know, a day later or whatever? Nope. Turns out, my friend says, because the Habs, you know, that's their building, I guess.
Yeah.
They get
first right of refusal. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Obviously. Like, going to the NHL Stanley Cup final is a little more important than a Corey Hart concert. No offense, Corey. You know who I saw the other day with my wife? Huey Lewis and the freaking News.
How was that for you?
Oh, my God. Still got it, man. Like, the guy's old. I don't know how old. 50s, whatever he is. And the band is tight. They got the full horn section. It was like a time capsule. Yeah. It was so cool. The only song he could not sing, and which is one of my favorite Huey Lewis songs, is Do You Believe in Love? Because it's up here, you know, Do You Believe? And he couldn't quite hit the notes, so he did the thing where you get the audience to sing with the mic to the audience.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's still
it's good.
Storyteller, so comfortable on stage after all these millenniums. And really, and it was this is my wife and I's 25th anniversary year, so we can't really afford like some big party.
Right, yeah.
So we're doing as many small experiences as we can. And I got my pal Jim Cressman hooked me up with the tickets. Rock star. I want to thank Jim publicly on It's a Show. Maybe we can do a shout out to him.
Who's awesome?
He's awesome. Jim Cressman, you're awesome. And so we're going to do as many of those little things. And I could go on for days about what happened at the hotel. Nothing like that. But I mean, the one thing that happened was the air conditioning didn't quite function.
Okay, and this is my problem with hotels because I've been down that road.
Yeah.
Luckily for us, we are not in the hot season.
Yeah.
However, rooms get muggy. You like a little climate control. That's one thing I just want to work at all times. Yeah.
These were the separate units, not like a central unit for the hotel.
Thank God for those separate units.
Well, they both went out, popped out, boom, boom. Some breaker somewhere in the bowels of the building blew up. But the one thing I don't understand when I stay in a hotel, and this always bugs me, I don't like to see cracks on the ceiling and weird stains and stuff on the ceiling. Well, stains in the bed are worse, obviously.
Yeah.
My mom has a policy. She used to send my dad into the hotel or a motel, and he'd have to strip the bed, check it all out. If there was any hint of problems, we have to move on. Anyway, what I can't figure out is who designs the curtains for hotel rooms, because they don't quite shut.
Yes.
There's always that ray of light in the morning streams through. You cannot, it doesn't matter how you finagle it.
Where they meet. Now, I've stayed at a place in Edmonton, the Chateau Lacombe Crown Plaza.
Wow.
And
nice.
It's got the clip. Like, they include like a little curtain clip.
That's amazing.
Like a chip clip.
Yeah.
But for the curtain, so you can kind of keep that closed. But you're right. It is.
I bet you. You know,
a scene.
If we did that, just took. Oh, Sparky's dying. We need bourbon. Bourbon's that. It should be noted we're at the Farside Lounge. That's our mobile broadcast location today, and it's a drizzly day. So we were originally intending to have soup, but we had the chili in a bun instead. Which was pretty good.
I've got mixed reviews on it, but
it was just bland. It wasn't spicy.
It is a post-secondary education institution. Not that they're in relation. I'm sure they outsource the catering.
Yeah.
I love it here. Don't get me wrong. The chili.
Well, there was a card on the counter that said,
rate
the experience. And I thought we could maybe return that a month from now, which is about the same time as we waited for our chili. Anyway, where was I? So curtain. Oh, why don't we market like the chip clip only for the hotel motel curtains?
Yeah.
And, you know, we could brand it with some funny name and you can make a fortune and people get a kick out of it. Right.
And even if at home, because I've got the curtain blinds combination I need that extra darkness
layer.
In my bedroom. And I've managed to, you know, jimmy it and rig it. So I do like the pull and then pull over fold and then kind of tuck.
Wow.
A clip would be easier, though.
Like a drape ninja.
Yeah, drape ninja.
When I grew up on the farm, Mom had the front room, so, like, it was untouchable.
Yeah.
You weren't really even allowed to even crossed the threshold.
It was like a showroom.
It had one of those, one of those bifold doors, those plastic kind of bifold doors, to separate it from the rest of the complex. And those drapes, I remember, I want to say that those drapes set Big Al back 25 hundy back in the 70s.
Back in the day, yeah.
Because drapes were that important. Why? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I tack up some sheets.
I remember my grandma's house. When she moved into her house in town when she retired, they built the house, and then I remember the front room curtains. You've got the two sets, the two tracks, right?
Yeah.
The decorative in the front.
Yeah. That's right.
And you never touched
the curtain mullets.
The decorative curtains
business
never
front,
moved.
Party in the back.
Never move the decorative curtains. They do not get pulled.
Oh, I know.
But the ones in the back do.
I used to, and that was the good furniture in there as well. So you sat on the floor if you wanted to listen to the 8-track.
The plastic.
You used to listen to Bonnie Tyler and Burning Love from Elvis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, classic old people.
Oh, speaking of, I want to talk a little bit about the grandfather clock that I've inherited since I'm the oldest.
Yes.
So it was great-grandpa Herman got it. No, great-great-grandpa Herman. Then great-grandpa Ernie had it. Then my grandpa. Then my pop. I have it in my house now, so it's prominently figures. And I took the chiming thing out.
Yeah.
Because that drives me crazy. Boom, boom.
That's the whole point.
I know, but maybe when I'm old, I'll dig it, but I don't dig it now. Dad doesn't know why I took it out, but anyway. So we have a red love seat right next to it. And our cat, Lily, a calico cat, Lily, she now has taken to, because we have little dogs and they always bugger.
Yeah.
So she jumps from the back of the love seat to the top of the grandfather clock, which I thought was kind of charming and interesting for a while. The other day, she was off kilter a little bit. And the GPS went awry inside the cat. And the clock started tipping. And I'm going, oh my God, if that thing smashes, I would not know what to do. So that
was ship the cat off. Do you know what? Extended vacation.
Do you know what ancient Egyptians did to mourn the death of their cats? See if you can guess the right answer. A, shaved their eyebrows. B, shaved their beards. Or C, shaved their armpits.
A.
Eyebrows. You looked, but that's
no, I
okay.
didn't look.
It's just bizarre. So they shave. If your cat dies, you shave off your eyebrows in tribute. That makes no sense.
Well, a little, maybe a little sense. More sense than the armpits.
Is that one of the, is that what some of those crazy ladies we see with the painted on eyebrows?
They're
mourning their
possible.
Cats. And it
very,
all makes sense now.
Very possible.
They're Egyptians.
Walk like one.
Well, from my dad to fatherly dating advice for you.
Oh,
it's time
good,
for a
good.
Sparky love life update. 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 So my middle daughter has been being courted by several thousand boys.
Let us discuss the age of said.
She's 18. But
this is the little one of the
middle. The middle, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 18. Oh,
18.
Yeah.
So
that's
and here's the thing we've been encountering. A lot of these gentlemen.
Yes.
Text their brains out, and they feel free to let fly with whatever they want to text.
Oh, boy.
Okay, here's what I'm saying.
I can only imagine.
If you are interested in my daughter or any man's daughter, pick up the phone. Don't do the texting, man. You will set yourself apart. You will be old school, respectful, and have a conversation with the girl. But in my day, we had to pick up the rotary dial.
Yeah.
And your heart is pounding. The butterflies are taking you over, and you actually had to have a conversation with the girl. And so if you can't do that, man, I don't know. I think it's we need to throw back a little bit and get a little more traditional with the dating. My advice. My opinion.
That's great advice. I did not do texting because cell phones weren't really popular back in the day.
Yeah. But now that's what's happening.
Yes.
It's all Tinder and whatever.
All the Tinder. No new matches, by the way. No new developments.
No new developments, nothing.
I keep getting... There's this thing on a couple of sites where you can... you know, I want to meet you. I don't want to meet you. You can kind of rate people that way.
Yeah.
And on one site in particular, POF, Plenty of Fish, you know who wants to meet you. So, like, I can see who wants to meet me.
Right.
Because they've said yes. And I got to say, the selection of yeses aren't... I don't even know what to say. This...
Are you ready to chuck this whole thing? Like, just forget the electronics and just go old school? Or what? Because it's not working out.
I don't even know how to do it old school. Like, how do you approach people in a public setting without being that creep? And, you know, like,
I
have no game, as you know.
Well,
like I said, there could be the dream girl at a table across from us. I wouldn't know what to do.
I think, you know what? Since you love to text, when you get the dream girl close to you, you got to text me or Tina Tuner and
That's
get
right.
some, like, on-the-spot advice. That's what you got to do.
So the selection is just not good.
And so then, plenty of fish is a misnomer.
Everything is the worst.
Nothing in there.
I'm after the girls that I, you know, up to my standards.
Yeah.
And my friend says, lower your standards. But here I am. I've had prime grade A steak. I don't want leftovers. Want steak.
Oh, boy. That's the thing. You're the same as my buddy. I got a buddy who's my age. And he barely just found a girl. She's in Ecuador. So he has to fly to Ecuador. $1,700 a plane ticket every time he wants to see this girl.
Funny you mention that, because I had a debate with a friend. How far would you travel for love?
That's crazy. Yeah.
I would go 1.5 hours in any direction from my home base.
That's it. 1.5. That's your limit.
I don't want to go to Saskatoon. My friend's like, oh, what about this one from Saskatoon on the Match website? No, I'm not going to Saskatoon. That's like 5-6 hours away.
You can come with me. I will road tour and split the gas, and we'll go see her and see if it's worth it.
But then what if...
You convince her to move. Is she a nurse? She's probably a nurse.
Probably a nurse or a teacher.
Did you hear about that nurse who stole the baby? Oh, the fake nurse. She put the scrubs on, pretended to be a nurse, and stole the baby in Quebec.
Seriously? What is going traumatic. Through people's minds?
I don't know, man. But
so I won't travel for love. And if I do, there better be some serious sleepover action. That's
I
all
would
I'm saying.
Do anything for love. But I won't do that. We got to play some Meatloaf on this show.
That is a good song.
You know, I saw Meatloaf live in a concert in the Bezro Gardens.
I ate Meatloaf about a month ago.
Okay, well, we have a lot in common as usual. 22% of people on Match.com poll are proud to say they have used a coupon on the first date.
Oh.
Would you not? That's not.
First date?
Yeah, first date.
No.
I'd be all about the coupons later.
No. Yeah,
but not 100%. Right off the top. You look like a tool.
No, you can't.
Nobody
you
does
can't.
That.
You can't do the coupon.
Unless you prepaid for some experience or whatever and you used the coupon and she didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you use the coupon, it's not good.
Like it's a 2-for-1 special.
Oh. Sorry about that. Pardon me, excuse me. Why does it say, is that an hour 12?
No, we are at 18 minutes.
Oh, okay, what's that? Oh, it's 1:12. Good time. I got this. I know how to use these.
But yeah, it's like if I got the 2-for-1 special for some awesome wine trip and she doesn't know about
for
it,
for sure.
Great, of course.
Yeah, makes sense.
But you don't go to McDonald's and have the two can dine for $9.98.
Which is still outrageously priced.
Well, a little bit,
When I was a kid, man, going to McDonald's, $5 would feed like 5 people.
Yeah.
It's crazy. 65% of couples, so this, if you ever get to be a couple, said they had an argument during their last vacation because one of them would not stop checking their work email.
Yes.
And you know what?
I believe that. Are you guilty?
My wife calls my phone my mistress, and it's uncomfortable, and I've got to stop. And recently I announced a career change.
Yeah.
And, I am getting texts, Facebook, not that I'm a big deal, but I've been doing the same career for 25 years. So people from all nooks and crannies of the country are checking in, which is amazing and so cool. But I'm on my phone all the time and I'm going, oh, this is going to turn out badly. So fellas, just put it away.
This is...
Well, I guess I'll talk about myself. I'm 44, never been married. People ask me why I've never been married. Good question. Probably because I talk to married people all the time. And you know what I'm not hearing? Enthusiasm. Ain't nobody selling this marriage thing. You wouldn't buy any other product if people talked about it the same way people talk about being married. Like if you went to buy a car and a salesman was like, well, this car, it's not easy. It's not easy, you know? You really got to work hard. It takes a lot of work. And there'll be good days and bad days with this car. But don't give up. I ask married people all the time, how do you like being married? At best, you know what I hear? So far, so good. At best. I ask people, how do you like Game of Thrones? They're like, oh my God. I try to meet women on the internet. Anybody do the internet? You gotta be careful on the internet. People lie to you on the internet. Now, what's the number one lie on the internet? People lie about their age on the internet. And then they'll put up like an old picture from like 1982. And then they look young in a picture, and then you meet them, and they're 78 years old. That's why I tell women I meet online, look, send me a picture of you holding today's paper. Or at least an iPhone 4, for God's sakes. You got that?
I live for the chance to go on vacation and disconnect. Even better when I'm in an area where there's literally no cell service and you have no choice but
to disconnect. So BS, that May long weekend, you...
Oh, I had service. I was on there periodically, but you have to keep in mind, when I tent, there's no power source.
Yeah.
So when the phone
dies.
Yeah. It's a fact of life.
And you still survived. That's amazing.
There's a campground that I'm going to go back to in Jasper National Park that I was there last year.
there is no service.
Wow.
And you're literally disconnected, which is, it's an amazing feeling. It's weird, but it's great. It gives you a chance to chill.
You know what? I've been asked to do a grad speech, like be a keynote speaker at a grad in a small little town.
Really?
And I'm going, first of all, I thought, no, I'll pretend I was busy that day and say I can't do it because I'm going, oh my God, 20 to 30 minutes they want me to talk.
You could pull it off, though.
But you know what? I'm making a transition right now myself in careers.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, high school to the real world is a transition. So I think I got a hook.
I think, yeah, you can relate.
Now, I saw some advice for new graduates this morning on the internet. So take a few weeks off after grad to enjoy the feeling of being done something.
Yeah.
Focus on putting finals, professors, lectures, and all-nighters behind you. So this is college or high school grad.
Yeah, yeah.
No shame at living at home.
Wow.
Depends on who you ask.
Preach, sister.
The job market for new grads sucks. So if you can tolerate your family members, you'll be saving a lot of loot in the long run.
I was lucky enough to hitch up with my auntie in her basement in the city right after that. So it definitely helps.
It was comfortable.
Helps, and you know, you still have to pay a little bit, but it's a lot easier than going out
and pick up after yourself and help out once in a while.
Yeah.
That's all we ask our kids to, man. Like, we're not asking for a big deal. Just load the dishwasher once a week. Hold on to your Starbucks job while you job hunt. It will keep you busy, motivated, and you'll have some spending cash. That's good advice.
Yeah, very good.
Hope for the best. Just keep doing something. Say goodbye to spring break and summer vacation. Most entry-level jobs won't offer you the luxury of regular time off, which is a lot hard for a pill for a lot of people to swallow because you're used to, you know, you got school breaks.
Well, exactly.
It can take 60 resumes to land one job interview.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
I believe that.
I showed you the cover letter I sent to Calgary in 1992. Typewritten, mind you. And I got that job. I don't know. I asked for $2,500 a month, and I got $2,000, I think.
It showcased your personality. I really enjoyed the part about the hygiene.
Yeah.
You've used that line a few times in previous correspondence.
Yeah, I'm an old one-trick pony. Put any monetary graduation gifts into an emergency fund. Life happens. Be prepared for it. If you hate your first job, learn from it while you search for a new one. If you do your basic, crappy, low-salary job with dignity, you will be respected. And, you know, you never know who's watching.
Yeah.
In this day and age, not just social media, but you don't know if you're a barista at Starbucks and some guy's coming in. He could be a CEO. He likes the way you roll.
Yeah.
He goes, excuse me, here's my card. Call me tomorrow.
Yeah.
You never know.
Side note, I enjoyed how you figured out how to double side print that thing.
I didn't. You know what? It defaults to double side.
Oh, really?
And when I really decide what I want to do, then I put it on one-sided because then it gets too confusing. It saves the trees, but it's confusing.
The trees are already dead, but...
I want to talk for a second about my dad. He had to go in the hospital recently, and he had to be taken by ambulance to emergency. This has happened before in our family because my dad's heart is not good. And my buddy Herman passed away recently, and he had quite a few trips via ambulance to the hospital as well. And that hospital was in this village. This other hospital is in Saskatoon. What I don't understand is the lack of common sense from whoever builds the hospitals. And they just renovated it and the whole thing. Triage is what happens when you're assessed when you come into emergency.
Okay.
I think they should do something called triage. So, which is the same thing essentially. But when you come into the hospital, if you are a criminal and you've been injured in the line of duty, then you go down the left hallway to criminal world.
Right.
If you have psychiatric issues, you go down the middle aisle. And if you're a child or an elderly person who has paid their taxes their whole life and a proud Canadian, done their job, you go to the right quiet wing area.
Okay, yeah.
That, and, you know, everybody else, you know, moms and dads can go to the right or whatever, families. But my dad had to stay in a emergency bed with six other people in with a curtain.
Yes, yeah.
With guys screaming profanities right across from him all night long. I was trying to talk to him on the phone from here. And I said, what the hell is that? And he, this guy's been at it all night and whatever. And Big Al, he can't even move. He can't get off the bed. So he can't even club the guy if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's disrespectful. It's like what they do, the lack of attention the war veterans get, whether you're from Afghanistan or from whatever.
Yeah.
I just think that this hospital thing, use some common sense. You, if you're sick and feeling crappy, you want a quiet place to convalesce.
Yeah.
You want, you know, some happy people around you, you know, a warm paint job and stuff, maybe a TV, all that. But that's secondary to having some peace and quiet and not having a crazy person across from you.
Oh, especially in a situation like that where I'm sure you're nervous or scared.
He's scared. You know, my sister only could stay there till 11, then she's gone, right? And then he's there all night listening to this guy, doesn't get any sleep, and he just feels worse.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that whoever's in charge of hospital world and the health system, get on it. If you want to talk more, we're here. It's a show. Hit us up on Facebook.
Facebook.com/ It's a Show Podcast.
What do you got over there?
Just to wrap up quickly, I've got the big summer wedding coming up on June 21st, first day of summer. My cousin's getting married, finally. Nice. It's going to be in the middle of nowhere, essentially. And my dad has concerns that I have not contacted the couple about my MC duties.
Oh. And when is it?
June 21st.
Oh, okay.
Lots getting of close. Time. Getting I'm close. Not concerned, but he's like, oh, have you called Lisa? Talk to Lisa. I was like,
dude. He's not a pro like you.
I'm like, I got this. I've been actually coming up with ideas and concepts and
how to
try to be witty and funny and charming.
Yeah.
And I've been taking notes on my phone, but
there you go.
He's worried. I'm not worried.
Yeah.
I'm more worried about what I'm going to wear.
Yeah, well, that's always.
I haven't figured that out yet.
Because if you look good, you got the confidence to do anything anyway.
Exactly. And I'm a big semi to do.
Maybe not we could go. Maybe we could go to the 2-for-1 suit sale because I need a suit. That's right. My new job. You got to wear suits.
I know. And you alluded to a big announcement on your side of things. I enjoyed how you kind of posted that to the world on your personal Facebook.
Yeah.
I am also on the fringe of an announcement in my life, and I am trying to think of a creative way to do so.
Oh.
So I might take a page from your book.
Nice. So, yeah. Like, I know, you know, I'm not good at that. There's so many guys that are super good at putting their real life on Facebook and Twitter and all that. I've never been good at it. So I just sat down, though, and there was a few people that I wanted to acknowledge, and I don't think I did a tremendous job, but at least I put something out there, and a lot of people are asking me, what are you doing next? What are you doing next? Yeah. And to be honest, I don't even know. I don't know what the position is, kind of. I schmooze my way in, and we'll see what happens next.
It's different.
Now you got me intrigued about your announcement.
Well,
you got an operation, or what's happening?
Here's my thing about Facebook. It's mostly for family and close friends, right? I don't have everyone under the sun on there. But it's away from like my dad, my brothers, and my sister, my aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
To, you know, just keep in the loop of my life, as boring or as exciting as it may be.
Yeah.
And a few of them know of what's going to happen, but I've been debating whether I should just tell the world, air quotes, or not.
Air quotes.
But I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I'm going to probably just take time off this summer.
What?
I'm not retiring or anything.
You're not retiring. So what kind of time frame are we talking about?
The announcement, I think, will happen in August.
Okay. Wow.
But
That's what we call in show business a teaser campaign. Wow.
Very busy, very...
Awesome.
High society-esque. Not really high society, but...
Nice.
It's all part of the life plan. You know, everyone has these life plans or ideas that they want to...
I don't think everybody does, and my wife and I are just starting to grow into that mode now and trying to take time for ourselves as a couple and stewards of the whole family to get some stuff figured out for long term, because none of us are getting any younger and life's not getting any cheaper.
Yeah.
We got to get rich quick, some kind of scheme. I don't know what we can do.
Well, that's exactly
maybe
the thing.
Maybe our clips for the drapes in the motel is going to be the ticket.
Exactly the thing. Like, I'm still young, thankfully, I guess. I have no choice, but... you know, if you're not happy with how things are going, or if you want to change your path, then change.
Change it. Don't
make
be afraid.
Happen. Yeah.
Did you hear that Jim Carrey? I wish I had that clip. Jim Carrey did a grad address. This ties right into what we were just talking about. And that was essentially, when it got distilled down, don't be afraid of anything. What are you afraid of? You're afraid of if you fail, good, because then you learn something. Yeah. Move on and try something else.
Oh, exactly.
If you're afraid to fail, you're going to live your whole life in fear. He said, if I would have succumbed to my fear, I think that's the right word. That doesn't sound good. Succumbed. That's what it is. If he would have let his fear take over, he never would have become a mega mogul movie star. Whatever, I'm losing it.
Mogul
star.
So anyways. Yeah.
You can spend your whole life imagining ghosts, worrying about the pathway to the future, but all there will ever be is what's happening here and the decisions we make in this moment, which are based in either love or fear. So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. What we really want seems impossibly out of reach and ridiculous to expect, so we never dare to ask the universe for it. I'm saying, I'm the proof that you can ask the universe for it.
Kids, the lesson of the day is go after your dream, aim for the sky, go beyond the sky, aim for space.
Yeah, we can't go to the sky. It's too limiting now. You got to go to the stratosphere.
You got to go past the International Space Station.
Okay, so here's a guy who's followed his dreams. Actually, his dream was to be a rock and roll star. He's a lead guitar player in a superstar band that you're going to find out about. But that's not even his day job. He considers himself to be a bit of a failed musician, to be honest with you. His day job is a novelist and a celebrated novelist. He's number one on the New York Times bestseller list with Natchez Burning, a story about racism problems in the South. And that's where he lives, in Mississippi. He's friends with Morgan Freeman.
Oh,
and
you're
going to hear some crazy stuff in this feature-length interview with the second half of It's a Show. Until we see you again,
keep in touch.
Finger guns.
This portion of It's a Show podcast was recorded live in front of a studio audience.
This is Greg. How you doing?
Number one New York Times bestselling author Greg Iles returns with his most eagerly anticipated novel yet, and his first in 5 years, Natchez Burning. The first installment in an epic trilogy that interweaves crimes, lies, and secrets past and present in a mesmerizing thriller featuring Southern lawyer and former prosecutor Penn Cage. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Glad to be here, Greg. I feel like I'm talking to my twin, man. It's strange.
Well, okay, so you've been an author for a long time. What real jobs did you have before you became a success in the literary world?
Well, if you can call it a real job, I was a rock and roll musician, which, you know, I'm back to doing that now that I play in a band with Stephen King and Dave Barry and Amy Tan. So I've sort of come full circle. But other than that, you know, I had some real jobs like digging sewer ditches and loading trucks. Not so much fun.
Back up the bus. You're in a band with Amy Tan and who?
Stephen King, Scott Turow, Matt Groening, who invented Bart Simpson. Yeah, we play for charity, and it's about the most fun you could ever have, to be honest.
See, kids, stay in school. You never know what could happen.
You never know what an English degree can get you, right?
Absolutely. So where did you attend university?
Ole Miss, baby.
Ole Miss.
Famous for not such good things, but also the home of William Faulkner. So it's, you know, mixed blessing, good place.
Oh, back to the band for just a sec. What do you play?
Lead guitar. As Dave Barry says, if I'm not there on stage, he plays lead guitar, but once I walk on stage, I'm lead guitar.
Dave Barry is a classic. Oh, my God, I love his stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, just picture this. If you don't know about the band, picture demure Amy Tan dressed from head to toe in black leather, carrying a bullwhip, whipping us all on the bottom while singing "These Boots Are Made for Walking." I mean, this is a spectacle you have to see to believe.
Can I book you guys for my 50th?
That'd be awesome. I wish you could. This is a very hard band to book, I'll tell you that.
Who have you played for? So you play for the kings and the presidents of society.
I'll tell you this. This band turned down a gig at the White House. That's all I want to say. So, you know, we've played Google headquarters. We played UCLA in front of 20,000 people. It's crazy stuff, man.
That is awesome. Okay, now I want to get the name of where you grew up. Natchez, is that how you say it?
It's actually Natchez, sort of rhymes with matches. It's hard for people north of the Mason-Dixon line to get that, but that's the name of it, and it's a unique place. It's kind of like a little New Orleans, you know, very, very atypical for Mississippi.
What was it like to grow up there?
Well, it was sort of like growing up in a place where the Old South, like Gone with the Wind, was preserved in amber. You would think a place like that wouldn't still exist in the 20th century, but it really did. I grew up one mile from the spot where the biggest Ku Klux Klan meeting in America was held.
Oh, my God.
So I saw as a child some pretty crazy things growing up. And my dad was a doctor who treated about 60% African-American patients, and so this is a book that's really brutally frank and told from the inside of the front lines of the 1960s in Mississippi. You know, I'm not preaching about race, but there's been a tremendous reaction to it, especially from Hollywood. And I think it's because in this world of political correctness, I've delivered this book that just throws all that aside and says, here's how it was. Take it or leave it, you know?
Yeah, well, you can pick up any Mark Twain book, and it's the same deal, right?
Absolutely, because Twain, look, he was writing about the world the way it was, not the way it ought to be. And some people appreciate that, and other people would rather turn away.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. It is raw and visceral, and you know, you've got to be prepared for opening the pages. But you are a bestseller. I mean, everything you put out. Can you harken back to the day when you weren't very good at this and thought, hey, man, maybe I should chuck this all and just go rock and roll, play
you
guitar?
You know what, Greg? It's funny. Every writer I know has a different story. For me, it was more I had to face that with music. If you ask me what I'd rather be doing, I'd rather still be playing music.
Right.
But I realized, you know what, I wasn't going to be the best in the world, whereas writing was something I always could just do almost without trying. I didn't especially want to. But when I got to be 30 and it was time to get a real job, I decided it was time to do what I knew I could do. So my very first book was a New York Times bestseller, and I never looked back.
So how long is it different every time, or is there a typical set amount of time it takes you to complete a novel?
Well, everybody's different. You know, a lot of the pressure from publishers, once you start making the money, is to repeat yourself and basically rewrite your last book. I've never done that. I've always done something different. But with this book, man, like my bandmate Stephen King in 1999 when he was hit by that van, you know, 3 years ago I pulled on the Highway 61 and a truck hit my driver's door going 70. Took off my leg, tore my aorta, broke 20-something bones.
Oh, my God.
And I was writing Natchez Burning at that time, and it totally changed my approach to the novel. That's when I said, I don't care who I make mad. I don't care if the publisher likes it. I'm gonna do it the way it ought to be done. And so it's a cliche, but it was a blessing in disguise because everything that's coming now came out of that tragedy.
That's incredible. So you're okay now? Your leg is good?
I got a prosthetic, you know, like the Blade Runner, those kind of guys, and you know, I'm not as fast as I used to be, but I'm certainly a lot wiser than I used to be, put it that way.
Sound like a good candidate for Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, leave me out of that, man. I'll stick to, you know, playing with my bandmates.
I'll tell you, why do you think that racism still persists in this enlightened age? I mean, just as recent as the playoffs, with what happened with the Bruins fans tweeting about PK Subban, it's horrific, heinous, and you'd think that we've come further than this and we're better than this.
I'll tell you why. It's really simple. And I don't know what anybody's politics are. I don't care. When President Obama was elected and people start talking about a post-racial society, I just laughed because we are so far from that. You know, prejudice is based in fear of the other, and it is a ancient tribal instinct, and Greg, it's going to be with us 2-3 more generations at least before we put it behind us, if we ever do.
We need another show on television like Archie Bunker to deal with this stuff so it's out in the open, because
yeah, absolutely.
You know, that was before its time, obviously, and it was quite shocking. I was like a, you know, grade school teenager kid when that show was on the air in prime time, and I said, oh my God, can you say that on TV? But it really got you thinking about these issues. And now I guess with social media and Twitter and stuff, we all became aware instantaneously of how PK Subban was being treated. And you just shake your head. And I mean, that's one of many incidents that happen weekly around the world.
But you know what? You just brought up the All in the Family. I think we've reached a point now of political correctness where if you put Archie Bunker on TV today, it would almost be just as shocking today as it was then, because they dealt with it so forthrightly, you know? It's a strange climate we live in, but one thing I want to say while I'm talking to you is I'm so glad to see the book. I mean, it debuted at number 2 on the New York Times here, but it also debuted at number 2 in Canada. And I just grew really, it made me curious, you know, as to why it would resonate up there the way it does here. But I'm glad to see it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're all trying to figure out the world just like Americans, and we don't want to make a misstep and treat anybody terribly. And it's just such an evolving thing. And when you're a parent, it's difficult as well, because you're right. Sometimes things are too politically correct. Some playground justice once in a while, if it were to be doled out, I'm not condoning it because I don't want to get a letter from somebody. But, you know, I think it had a way back in our day of correcting a situation.
That's right. I mean, in the end, political relations and race relations are between people, not institutions and laws. You mean, and you can see that by looking back. You know, you've had legal equality in the United States since 1965, but that doesn't change people's hearts. You know, it's got to happen on the ground where people live, where the boots are. And like you say, I don't want to get a lot of letters, but you got the right idea there.
How was your father treated when he was treating 60% African Americans at that time? As a doctor,
he had a lot of grateful black people in this town where we grew up, and you know, those people needed to be taken care of, but not everybody felt that obligation to do that. So he was allowed to do that, but I think he knew where the line was. He felt that a lot more should have been done to help the civil rights workers and to help progress, but he knew there was a line he absolutely could not cross without his family, our family, being retaliated against. And that kept him from doing what he knew he should do.
With all your tremendous wealth that you've accumulated from all of these successful books and your rock and roll band on the side, how come you stay there?
Well, you know what I say in answer to that? Ask Morgan Freeman why he comes back to Mississippi in all his spare time. You know, he could live anywhere he wants. And he himself said, you know, until I was like 55, I had no idea why my parents wanted to go back to Mississippi. And now he owns a blues club here and comes here every chance he gets. So there's something to be found in Mississippi, a sense of community and place and humanity. You wouldn't expect it, but that can't be found anywhere else in America. It's hard to explain, and we can't do it in this amount of time, but it's a unique place.
Can I come to the mansion when I go down south?
Absolutely, baby. I got a place you could stay in 200 feet over the Mississippi, overlooking it. Anytime.
Because I have no idea what that would be like, and it's never been on my bucket list, but since meeting you on the phone, and now it is.
Well, good. I'll be looking for you.
The book is Notches Burning by Greg Iles. Greg, a true pleasure. Thanks for spending some time with us and giving us a little insight into what you're about and what the book's about. And I encourage everybody to go online at Amazon or go to Chapters and grab it.
Thanks a lot, Greg. I really enjoyed it.
Feel it well. Sense of expectation hanging in the air.